And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, a conversation about immigration and people of color. Immigrants from Africa, the Caribbean, Latin America, and South America are much more likely to be deported or arrested. So why are rates of deportation so much higher than they are for white immigrants? We'll examine that with two undocumented citizens and organizers for undocumented communities in Baltimore and beyond. That's tomorrow, right here on Midday. So now we turn to a conversation about the challenges that caregiving presents. 42 million Americans, one in four adults, is currently shouldering the enormous responsibility of caring for an aging relative. Here in Maryland, more than 770,000 people are taking care of parents, grandparents, or family friends. Amy Goyer is a specialist on aging, family, and caregiving at AARP in Washington. She's the author of a book called Juggling Life, Work, and Caregiving, in which she tells the story of her caring for her parents and her sister. She joins us this afternoon from the studios of NPR in New York. Amy, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Happy to be here with you.
And Dorinda Adams is the program manager in the Office of Adult Services in the Maryland Department of Human Services. She also leads the Maryland Caregivers Commission, and she joins me here in Studio A. Dorinda, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
It's wonderful to be here, Tom. Thank you.
And listeners, if you are caring for a parent or a grandparent, a family member, maybe a family friend, let us know what your experience has been. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and to send us a tweet @MiddayTomHall. So, Amy Goyer, you literally wrote the book about this, about caregiving. It's an enormous number of people who do it. Is there a typical bio, a typical situation for people who are giving care to either older members of their family or friends that they might have? Is there any such thing as a typical caregiver in America?
Yeah, well, we look at a typical caregiver being around age 49, generally a woman. About 60% are women, but 40% are men, and I see that number growing a lot. Among millennials, it's 50-50 men and women. And that caregiver spends approximately an average of 18 hours a week, and they generally are caring for an older parent, a mother, and usually, and someone who lives not too far away from them. Now, that's the average or typical caregiver, but we have people outside that range. We have a significant number who are over age 75 who are caregiving, and we have a lot of long-distance family caregivers. So there really is a wide range of experiences when you're in this role of a family caregiver. It can be someone who's caregiving very intensively, like I am with my dad, who lives with me now and has Alzheimer's disease, or it could be where I had a different role with my grandparents, and I was a long-distance caregiver, and I helped my dad manage their care.
And Dorinda Adams, you were in a state office, and you lead this commission about this. So this is obviously something that the state government takes seriously. They've set up a whole operation to fool with it. What's your understanding of the caregiving situation here in Maryland?
Well, the Maryland Commission on Caregiving has actually been part of Maryland's support for family caregivers across the lifespan, actually since 2001. It was originally the Maryland Caregiver Support Coordinating Council, but it has just been changed as of October 1st this year to the Maryland Commission on Caregiving. And we actually look at family caregiving across the lifespan because we do have family members that are caring for children with a variety of special needs too. But I also want to make a point that there's a lot of older folks that are also caring for their relatives' children, such as kinship care. So what Amy is suggesting is accurate in what we're seeing in Maryland, but we're looking at it a little broader.
Yeah, so we hear a lot about the sandwich generation, mm-hmm. Amy Goyer, about, you know, folks, baby boomers in particular, taking care of not only their parents, but of course, still taking care of sometimes young children. Is that a pretty common occurrence as well?
Yes, and the way I look at it, all caregivers are sandwiched. So we have that significant number who are raising their children while they're caregiving for aging parents. But as Dorinda mentioned, we also have a lot of people who are caregiving for their grandchildren, they're raising grandchildren, and they're caregiving for their aging mm-hmm. parents, and they may still have their own children in the home. So then they have multiple levels. But we also are sandwiched between our work, our personal life, our trying to take care of ourselves, our other relationships. So caregivers have a lot of different things piled on us. It's like I said, a club sandwich generation.
Yeah, indeed. And Amy, what about the demographic breakdown in terms of race? I understand that Hispanic caregivers make the biggest have the biggest percentage of people providing care. How does it break down between Hispanics, African Americans, Asians, Caucasians?
Well, the prevalence is higher, and not in terms of the numbers, but in terms of the prevalence. So, among Hispanic, Latino family caregivers, among Hispanic and Latinos, about 20% are family caregivers, and it's a higher prevalence also among African Americans. So while the sheer numbers may be larger in terms of white or Caucasian Americans, you see this deeper prevalence, and that there could be a lot of reasons for that. There are cultural reasons that within families, and it's an expected role that you're going to step in and care for loved ones. They're more likely to have a multi-generational household as well and have multiple generations living in the same household. So we see that, and we see also that Hispanic family caregivers are actually spending a larger percentage of their income on out-of-pocket expenses when caregiving for a loved one.
And Dorinda Adams, that was a statistic that really stuck out to me. Nationwide, it's a $470 billion, with a
yes.
B, industry, as it were. This is the value of the unpaid caregiving that is being provided by people across the country. I mean, these are very serious investments of time and oftentimes personal money. And the expenses are occurred in a number of different ways.
That's absolutely right, Tom, and that is part of the reason that the commission exists, because for funding purposes, state resources, we want to ensure that we're coordinating the supports that are provided at all levels. And it's very much a partnership in identifying not only the public resources, but what's available in regards to the private industry, volunteers, businesses. And so a little bit of support can ensure that family caregivers are able to continue doing the tremendous job, because we also know that people prefer to be with their family, and that is considered a best practice as well.
And Amy Goyer, it's expensive to care for someone, a loved one, regardless of the generation. There's an estimate that's about 20% of people's income is spent caregiving. The average is $7,000. But it's not just what people are spending out of pocket. It's wages that they may not be able to earn in the future because they're not in the workforce. That's a dimension of this as well, right?
It is. If someone leaves the workforce, they lose an average of about $300,000 in wages and benefits by doing so. So it's a real significant risk when we make that decision to leave the workplace and care for our loved ones. But sometimes that's what families do, because in the long run, it's less expensive to do that than to have pay for care, or else they just don't have the cash funds to pay someone else to provide that care. So we may end up quitting our job or cutting back on our work hours, maybe going to part-time or doing a job share, maybe taking a less stressful job because you want to have a little more balance in your life. But many caregivers have to make different adjustments to their work life, and they may change their work hours, come in late and leave early, or take time where they have a telecommuting schedule. I did that when my dad had a hip replacement, rather, and I went and telecommuted for a month so I could help take care of my mom, who'd had a stroke, and And that was a temporary thing for me. But now, 8 years ago, I decided to become an independent consultant. So that changed my whole work situation, but it gave me the flexibility I wanted.
You're listening to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guests here are Amy Goyer. She's a specialist on aging, family, and caregiving at AARP, based in D.C. She joins us today from New York. Dorinda Adams is here with me in Studio A. She is with the Maryland Department of Human Services, and she leads the Maryland Caregivers Commission. What are your experiences as a caregiver? What are your challenges? What are the perhaps some of the solutions that you've come up with to address those challenges? Join our conversation at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday at wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, at midday Tom Hall. So, Dorinda Adams, the state of Maryland does offer some support for people who are in this situation providing care. One of them is called Respite Care. Explain what that program does.
Respite is actually a short break. And people define it in many different ways as to what it really means for them, but it is a short break from their duties as an unpaid or informal caregiver. We sometimes
say. So this is respite to the
caregivers
themselves, not the people needing the care.
Yes. Now, holistically, it should also be supportive of the person needing the care, and that's really important because many caregivers won't even try to access respite because they're not sure that the person providing the respite may provide for their family member, you know, the way they would. And so sometimes it takes a while for people to even access respite, but it is a short break. And we are fortunate here in Maryland that we do have respite availability. So
so give me an idea of the length of the respite. Two weeks?
Generally, in most circumstances, it is going to be about a day or 2 days at a time. Sometimes it could be as long as 2 weeks, but each circumstance is, again, is unique. And some family caregivers want a specific time frame so that perhaps they can participate in their faith community and go every, you know, time that that group meets. Others want to have a whole 2 weeks off. Sometimes it's an emergency. That's one of the things we've most recently started. We applied for federal funding and received some federal funding, and we've started an emergency fund for respite in our state, which is, you know, important too, because some family caregivers haven't even been able to attend another family member's funeral, for example.
What is the cost to people accessing respite care?
If they meet certain eligibility, it might not be any cost to them. And for some people, they may have to pay out of pocket. Again, it's going to be unique to every single circumstance.
And Amy Goyer, you write in your book and elsewhere about stress and burnout when it comes to caregiving. I mean, this is a highly stressful endeavor. For a number of reasons, what are some of the things that you advise people to keep an eye out for when it comes to burnout and to the stress involved in taking care of folks?
Well, it's very important to pay attention to what's going on in the rest of your life. And your health. So if you start to notice issues with other relationships, if you're having trouble keeping up with your finances and taking care of your own personal business, if your home's falling apart around you, or if your health is falling apart, I think people often ignore the other signs, the external signs that they're headed towards burnout, but they tend to pay attention when they get sick. Now, the problem is you don't really want to wait until you're in that state. You want to wait till your back goes out or you're sick or you have a heart attack. You need to pay attention to those other signs. So when you notice that you're tired a lot, when you feel overwhelmed, I think a big clue is when you feel, I can't do this anymore. You know, try not to do something drastic if you get to that point. That's just a red flag that you need to really focus some attention on taking care of yourself. Because I've learned I can do anything, but I cannot do everything. So I have got to find ways to build my caregiving team and take care of myself.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you're on the airplane, they say, you know, in case the oxygen mask comes down, put it on yourself first, then take care of your kid. So you're not going to be able to take care of anybody if you yourself are not physically up to the task. Yeah.
Right. I use a car analogy, and this really happened to me. I went into a gas station, and my car was running out of gas, and I filled it up and I pulled out and I thought, you know, it's really interesting. I can see a difference in the way the car runs when it has a full tank of gas. And of course I, you know, duh, right? But it was sort of this aha moment for me that I was expecting myself to run just as efficiently on empty. And that's not realistic. It's not a selfish thing for us to take care of ourselves. It's just a practical thing. So we need to fill our own tanks. We need to have quick things that we can do in 5 minutes, like get a cup of coffee or pet your animal or meditate or practice mindfulness, just experience joy. And then you need premium fill-ups where you need to actually spend an hour or two, get some respite, as Dorinda was talking about. Maybe do something fun with your loved ones. I used to take my parents out to dinner every Friday after Mom got her hair done, and that filled all of our tanks. And then you need tune-ups, and that's where you need a break when you're not taking care of anyone. You're away for a week or at least a few days. And just to completely get yourself balanced and grounded again, do some things to take care of yourself. I like to get massages, so that's always part of it for me. And then your regular routine maintenance. You've got to, sleep is my number one top priority, but also eating right and exercising and going to the doctor and doing the things that fill your own tank. Only we know really what nurtures us the most, you know, so you have to kind of become familiar with yourself and really be more self-aware about little things to big things, what really helps you.
Amy Goyer is a specialist on aging, family, and caregiving at AARP in Washington. Dorinda Adams is with the Maryland Department of Human Services. She leads the Maryland Caregivers Commission. What's your experience caring for a loved one or a family friend? Give us a call, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. We have an email from Cynthia that we're going to read as soon as we come back from a break. And Phil in North Baltimore, you hang on, because we're going to get to your call as soon as we come back. But before we take that break, on Mondays here on Midday, it is our practice to read the names of people who lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far in 2017, 305 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. Police last week identified a woman and two men who were shooting victims the week before last. They are Ashley Castor, who is 33 years old, Maurice Bird, 31 years old, and Demetrius Jones, Jr. He was also 31 years old. The Baltimore Sun reports that after last weekend's Baltimore ceasefire, we had 6 consecutive days without a killing here in Baltimore. But 3 people were homicide victims in Baltimore last week. They are Latasha Wells, age 38, Winfield Parker, age 51, and Tony Mason, Jr. He's an off-duty Washington, D.C. police officer. He was 40 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. If you've just joined us, we're talking about caregiving in Maryland and throughout the country. According to the National Alliance for Caregiving, the average caregiver is a 49-year-old woman who cares for an older relative. But millennials, both men and women, make up as much as 25% of all caregivers. Family caregivers are more prone to depression and chronic illness. The care that these people provide for aging relatives and friends, as we mentioned, is estimated to be worth about $470 billion every year. And the impact on the future earnings of the people providing regular care is hard to calculate. My guests are Amy Goyer of the AARP. Her book is called Juggling Life, Work, and Caregiving, and Dorinda Adams. She's the director of the Maryland Caregivers Commission in the Maryland Department of Human Services. Our phone number to join our conversation here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And to send us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to the phones. Phil in North Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Amy Goyer and Dorinda Adams.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. And thank you, Tom, for doing this program. I can really relate to this subject. I helped my mom for the last 7 years of her life back in the 1980s. She had Parkinson's disease, and it was very difficult. And I cut down my work and social activities considerably. And frankly, I became ill after that, or really towards the end. And then after that, I was diagnosed with something called chronic fatigue syndrome. And it was very difficult indeed, but I never did the right thing. I was her only child, and I was between my ages of 28 and 35 when that happened. And but it was, it was very difficult, but I did it. And I hear more and more now about this subject. I just wanted to share that.
Well, thank you for your call, and thank you for the care you gave your mom. I mean, Phil, your mom's your mom. You know, you gotta help out your mom. Did the medical advice that you received indicate that your diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome was caused? Is there a direct cause, you think, by the fact that you were changing your life so dramatically in order to care for your mom?
Well, absolutely, because when I was a young man, up in my 20s, I was not only a runner, I ran the famous Boston New York Marathon. So, I had tremendous energy in my life. So you talk about a change, and that's something most people can never do, running those type of things. So it absolutely changed my life. I had to stop running and other things, too, and just a lot of social activities became harder. So it considerably changed my life, yes.
So, Dorinda Adams, I mean, are there resources here in the state of Maryland that could address issues that Phil experienced, some years ago? But, I mean, if there's another person listening, and there probably is, who says, oh, that's my situation, too, I can relate, are there resources they can tap?
In addition to respite, there may be a specific type of support group that they would feel comfortable joining. And I would encourage anyone listening that if you do feel like you need some support, please reach out. Feel free to reach out to me at Dorinda, Dorinda, Adams@maryland.gov. And I will do my best to connect you to a resource that's appropriate to help.
And Amy Goyer, I know that Phil's situation is not at all unique. You have a part of your book called Tips for Caregiver Resiliency. And a couple of things you talk about are creating a plan and getting organized. What does the plan entail? What do you mean by getting organized around this issue of caregiving? How's that happen?
Well, you start by assessing the situation. And in my book, I start with assessing ourselves, the caregivers, first, before we assess our loved ones' needs. And that's because we usually put ourselves last. And in reality, if we put it first, maybe we'll actually do it. Looking what Where does our life situation? Do we have other family members we're caring for? Do we have children we're raising and others? What's our work situation? What's our own financial situation? Can we afford to contribute anything financially? Could I be able to change my work situation? So really taking a look at it instead of just falling into things. And then assessing your loved one's situation and creating a plan around the needs, the resources you all have, and the goals. For example, if your loved one's goal is to stay in their home as they age, then that gives you something, a framework to work with, and you're going to do everything you can to make that happen. If their goal is to move in with you or another family member, then you can make decisions based on that. So if you have that plan, things are going to change because caregiving is unpredictable. Our health is unpredictable. Everything, our situations are so unpredictable. But that framework is so important. important, because otherwise we're just kind of floundering out there and reacting to everything that comes at us. If you have that framework to go back to, then you can say, okay, if this is our goal, here's something we can adjust. We'll adjust this a little bit. Maybe we'll get a little more paid help to come in. We'll try and find a respite program. We'll contact Dorinda Adams at the State of Maryland. We'll find out what we can do. And I think that's the part that people skip. You know, it doesn't have to be a really complicated formal plan. It's maybe just something you jot down some notes, or you take time to have those conversations with your family. And having those conversations can be a little daunting, but you have to start somewhere, and you don't have to talk about it all at once. You know, just get the ball rolling and get a sense of where things stand and where you want to go.
We have an email from Cynthia, who says, I've been caring for my elderly parents for 3 years now. My dad passed away 2 years ago, and my mom has continued to go downhill. I'm 61, single, and cannot quit my full-time job at this time due to my retirement needs. My retired sister in Florida comes up once a year for 2 or 3 days and takes my mom to lunch and thinks that she's done her share. So my mom is getting to the point where she really needs assisted living, but I cannot convince her to even go and look at them. Any suggestions as to how I can get her to go and at least look at assisted living apartments? I believe that she believes it's like a nursing home. So Dorinda, you're nodding your head. I mean, this is something that I'm sure a lot of people are facing, you know, that decision of, you know, when do they leave the home that they've, you know, been in often for decades, mm-hmm. and how you have that conversation.
I think that, again, thinking about what Amy talks about in assessment, starting with the family caregiver themselves, it's then you start looking at what are the resources available. And so you, of course, want to bring the doctor in for her mother. You also may, again, want to look into, is she involved in a faith community? Is there someone she trusts from that perspective that also could maybe help her with some of this, or are there other trusted people in her life so that there can be an actual conversation? Because I think what happens is no one wants to have it be so hard that it's to the point where there is really no quality of life at home, even though we know people want to stay at home for as long as possible. The reality is sometimes it's no longer safe mm-hmm. in the home, and we've got to be able to have that conversation. So who does she feel, you know, her mother, who does she feel comfortable with? And those are just some of my thoughts about, I just know sure. some people, it's really starting in that faith community.
And Amy Greer, I had a fascinating conversation with someone from Shock Trauma, which is a, you know, internationally acclaimed center here in Maryland, who said that the number one reason for admission to Shock Trauma is not gunshot wounds or crime, it's not automobile accidents, it's falls. People are falling, which mm-hmm. is incredible. And of course, as people get older, the balance ain't what it used to be, and falls happen. How do you have that? How do you begin that difficult conversation with a parent when you're having that conversation that says, you know, we got to really think about moving out of this home?
Well, first of all, you need to really do your homework first. Observe. It doesn't help to just say, Mom, I don't think you're safe. You need to have some specific issues. If there have been multiple falls, then bring those up, talk about that. You want to look around the house and find out what the risks are. Maybe the laundry's in the basement and you're getting concerned about her going up and down the stairs carrying the laundry basket. So try to pinpoint what the concerns are, because you're absolutely right. Falls are our number one issue to deal with in terms of home modification as well. When you're talking about this, it doesn't always mean they have to move out of the home. There are a lot of modifications and home-based services now that would mean that they didn't have to necessarily leave their home, at least not yet. So when you look at your specific issues, find out, well, does it just mean that we need to move the laundry facilities? Do we need to get better lighting in the stairways and put handrails on both sides? Do we need to move mom's bedroom to the main floor? Do we need to modify? I just modified our bathroom for my dad and made it so it's a walk-in, roll-in shower instead of a bathtub. Those are things that you can do. And that those are the kind of things that people often see as the reason they have to move out of a home. So be sure to find out if there are things you can do so they could stay there. And then community-based services. You know, Maryland has some great home and community-based services mm-hmm. that they could get some help in the home. So before you make a decision to move, make sure that you've done everything you can to make it safe in the home. And then, you know, talk about what the other issues are. You can start the conversation with I statements. I'm concerned about, or I want you to be safe, Mom, or I want to know what I can do to help more. You know, not you need to move, Mom. You know, starting out with you like that can put anybody on the defensive.
Sure.
So, and Dorinda made a good point about having the right people.
We have a phone call from Marty, which we're not going to be able to take, Marty. I apologize. He's calling from Frederick County, but he has the same question as an emailer from Baltimore, Mark, who says, are there support services that are income-based? Are these support services, Dorinda, that you're talking about, income-based, county-based, or state agency-based? And I'm going to give you just about 20 seconds to respond.
There's a combination. Again, some of them are county, some state, some federal, and some are for pay.
Well, thanks to both of you for joining us this afternoon. Amy Goyer, she's a specialist on aging, family, and caregiving at AARP. Her book's called Juggling Life, Work, and Caregiving. Dorinda Adams is the director of the Maryland Commission on Caregiving. And with AARP, the commission is presenting a free symposium on caregiving featuring Amy Goyer tomorrow. It's sold out, but you can come to wipr.org/midday and we'll have information so you can get on the list for the next time. That'll do it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, the so-called green card lottery and how the immigration system treats immigrants of color much differently than white immigrants. Thanks to the Diz for supplying lunch today for our guests. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. They're on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. On behalf of the entire Midday team, we appreciate your listening. Have a great day.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.